All right, so we've got the Finance Committee all assembled. I think we've got a quorum of the committee. Our business today will include not only committee business, but also a capital budget work session, which can include all members of the board, but we're going to begin with our safety contact for today, Mr. Lavin.
Good morning. In the case of emergency, we will egress through the main doors or closest exit, which are illuminated by an exit sign. We will assemble on the lawn of the National Building Museum across the street. An automatic external defibrillator is available behind the guard station. Fire extinguishers are strategically placed throughout the building. Restrooms are past the guard desk on the left. This morning, safety contact is about home fires, which are more prevalent in the winter than any other season. The following video can help maintain a fire-free home this winter season.
This message brought to you by FEMA. Home fires occur most often in winter. Keep anything that can catch fire at least 3 feet from heating equipment. And never use an oven to heat your home. Stay in the kitchen when frying, grilling, or broiling food. Turn space heaters off when you leave the room or go to bed. Make sure all vents are clear of snow and ice to allow carbon monoxide to vent outside. Have your furnace, heating system, and chimneys serviced each year by a qualified professional. Learn more at www.usfa.fema.gov.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lavin. Good information for us all. First order of business is to approve the agenda for today. Need a member of the committee to move approval of the agenda. Thank you, Mr. Price. Do we have a second? Second. All in favor? Members of the committee only? Aye. Opposed? The agenda is approved. Now move to consideration of the minutes from the December 13, 2018 meeting. We need a motion from a member of the committee. So move. And seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The ayes have it. The minutes of December 13th are approved. Before we move into our agenda today, I'd like to just briefly outline the items that we're going to be covering. First, we have Mr. Kanti Srikanth, who is the director of the Transportation Planning Board, who will give us an overview of a key initiative of the TPB, the Visualize 2045 long-range transportation plan, pretty important work. I won't steal the thunder of Mr. Srikanth, but I served as a member of the TPB for last year when this was approved, and it's a pretty important piece of work for mobility in the community, and I believe Mr. Crawford was interested in having this conversation today, so I thank you for that. Next, we're going to receive a progress report on this year's capital program and substantially have a conversation about the proposed FY20 capital budget. And then finally, there are two joint development solicitations, one at the West Falls Church Metro Station in Virginia and one at the Capitol Heights Metro Station in Prince George's County. So we've got a full agenda, and we'll begin with Mr. Srikanth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. He's on. Closer?
Yeah, it's got to be pretty close, Kanti.
Okay, already. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm pleased to have this opportunity to describe and discuss briefly Visualize 2045 with you. Before that, if I may, take just a few minutes to describe the Transportation Planning Board. I suspect you all have an idea of what they do. I thought I will provide a brief overview so that we are all working off of the same understanding for today's discussion. So, like WMATA itself, the TPB is a regional entity. The federal statutes dictate its establishment, and federal regulations governs its roles and responsibilities. Like WMATA, the TPB serves three jurisdictions or three states. It differs from WMATA in some respects. The TPB does not build, operate, or maintain any transportation system. Its planning area is significantly larger than the WMATA service area. It includes more jurisdictions and consequently more number of members on the board, 44 members. So if the TPB does not build, operate, maintain any transportation system, the question could be, Why does TPP matter? Well, for one, federal law requires that for any project to receive federal funding or federal approval to be built or maintained or operated, even if no federal dollars are involved, it needs to be included in a metropolitan planning organization's plan and program documents. The TPB is the National Capital Region's Metropolitan Planning Organization. But beyond that, over the past 54 years that the TPB has been working, it has established itself as the place where the plans for transportation plan, projects and programs of all 24 jurisdictions in this region are compiled. They are not just compiled, but they are then examined through a regional lens. The regional lens then proceeds to look at how these planned projects and programs support a set of regional values and priorities for the region's transportation system. Lastly, and in my opinion, most importantly, it is the place where such regional planning and collaboration happens continually, comprehensively, and cooperatively. And the last word is particularly important. Now, the TPB's approach to developing consensus around a regional set of goals, since it does not provide any funding for projects, it does not build, operate, maintain systems, it has worked by developing consensus around a set of goals, objectives, and priorities. And I might describe that as a top-down, bottom-up process. By that I mean the funding and investment plans are developed at the jurisdictional or a sub-regional or at the agency level, not by TPP. Which projects gets funded, which are prioritized, are done by the local jurisdictions, regional entities, sub-regional entities, the states, and not by TPP. The studies that assess the needs for projects and programs most of the time are done by the agency and not by TPP. Land use policies, economic development initiatives, two of the factors that really directly impact mobility and accessibility and the transportation system performance, are developed by the local entities and not by TPP. So, faced with this reality, the TPP has focused on working with decision makers of the region's jurisdictions and state entities to cooperatively develop a comprehensive vision and a set of goals for the transportation system. That is the top-down process. Then, based on these mutually shared goals, the TPP helps develop a set of regional priorities for the types of projects and programs that would meet regional goals and needs. And then, and most importantly, it assesses the transportation system performance that we might expect as a result of those investments. This is where the top-down, bottoms-up process meets. And the analysis is intended to inform the investment decisions and provide an opportunity for any changes that we may wish to make. In a nutshell, I would say the TPB's approach to regional transportation planning is having its members think regionally but act locally. So, with that, what is Visualize 2045? Visualize 2045 is the region's long-range transportation plan. It covers a period between today and the year 2045. This is the latest edition of the region's long-range transportation plan, and it is built on the anticipated demand and growth in population and employment, which places demand on the transportation system. It is also built on the funds that the three states and the 24 jurisdictions, including WMATA, Virginia Railway Express, MARC, systems reasonably expect to be available. It also lists the transit, highway, and non-motorized projects that have been locally approved to be implemented in this region between now and 2045. That is what the TPP's plans have been. This year, however, the Transportation Planning Board added a new element to its long-range transportation plan, and that is the aspirational element. to explain the why and how of this, I'll get into it in the later slides. This is a representation of how TPP develops the region's long-range transportation plan, using regional policies and priorities and land use. It also includes the revenue and expenditure projections and then it uses a complex mathematical model to estimate a set of performance measures that you see on the right. When the future performance indicators are not encouraging, TPP has periodically engaged in conducting a scenario analysis to sort of a what if. What if we did things differently? How might the system performance change? The scenario analysis are guided by the shared regional vision, goals, and priorities. These are the documents that the TPP has developed through a regional consensus process since 1998. It's the TPP vision, the region forward, regional transportation, priorities plan, and finally the newest one, the aspirational initiatives. I'm not going to go into all of these documents. Most of you may be familiar with some of these documents. Some of you around the table may even have worked to help develop these documents, so thank you. While I will try and build on expanding how some of these policies and priorities are informing the regional long-range transportation plan. So, one of the policies, priorities that is in the TPP's vision is about land use. What the Visualize 2045 shows is that working with COG, the TPP, many years ago, developed the concept of regional activity centers. Right? So we work with the local jurisdictions to estimate what is the anticipated future growth in population and employment. In Visualize 2045, we understand that the region expects to add about 1.2 million more people to this region on top of what we have. And the region also expects to add about 1 million more jobs. Right? So few people would say that the system today is performing and providing a service at perfectly acceptable levels during the peak period. But imagine on top of it, placing the demands for mobility that would come from 1.2 million more people and 1 million more jobs. So the TPP vision document, the priorities document, encourages jurisdictions to look at land use to see how we can be efficient in using the land area in a way that it affects the transportation system and how the transportation projects can be more effective. And Visualize 2045 tells us that the jurisdictions are indeed working toward this policy objective. The region expects of the 1.2 million, of the 1 million jobs that the region expects to add, 75% are anticipated to go in what are called regional activity centers. Of the 1.2 million more people, two-thirds of them are anticipated to go into regional activity centers. The regional activity centers, there are 141 of them. They are characterized by mixed use, high density, access to transit. And these 141 activity centers occupy a little less than 10% of the region's land area. That provides a scale and an efficiency and an opportunity to make the transportation investments go farther to meet our mobility and accessibility requirements. So Visualize 2045 shows that the region is working towards its policy goals and objectives. So that's the good part. Visualize 2045 also includes the revenue estimates that all of the jurisdictions, agencies, highway, transit agencies expect to have between now and 2045. And this, the charts here indicate the revenues for both operations and capital. It's about $291 billion over the next 26 years. That's about $11 billion per year. And by the way, these are in year of expenditure dollars, if these were converted to 2019 dollars, the numbers would be small. Two quick notes on this. The private sector funds shows up as at about 4%. While it is small from a regional planning perspective, that is a piece of the pie that has been growing. I don't know what that means, but that is what it is happening. But meanwhile, the federal funding has been going consistently down, and it is now, outside of the private sector, it contributes the least amount to the region's revenues. Now, perhaps of interest to this committee is the chart on to my right. That's the revenues for WMATA. These revenues reflect bus, rail, and metro access, and these includes the fare revenue projections that reflect a combination of fare increases and ridership growth between now and 2045. It includes federal formula funds, and most importantly, it includes PREA funding between now and 2045. So that remains a high priority for the Transportation Planning Board to secure that funding between now and 2045, if not forever. And the second, it also includes the new dedicated capital funding of about $500 million from the three states. And it also includes the state subsidies. And we have reflected the 3% cap that's currently in place. This committee is well aware of it, but it's probably worth noting that the federal contributions into the WMATA revenues is the smallest. Next, the Visualize 2045 also compiles the latest expenditure estimates that the region's jurisdictions and transportation agencies have planned between now and 2045. And this is for operations, state of good repair, and capacity expansion as needed between now and future. And again, these numbers on the chart are for operations and state of good repair. Within the TPP, it's worth noting the TPP has said the first order of priority is state of good repair. So the expenditure estimates also is about $291 billion over the next 26 years, about $11 billion per year. Two quick notes on the regional expenditure. And this is true even for WMATA. About 80% of the revenues are planned to be spent on operations and state of good repair, meaning only 20% is planned to be invested in expanding the capacity, right? So if the system is not performing to our aspirations and expectations and satisfactorily, in light of the significant growth, this anemic investment in capacity expansion does not bode well for system performance. And that is what TPP's Visualize 2045 analysis indeed shows. Perhaps now of interest to this committee, the WMATA expenditures on the right, these are based on your capital needs inventory study and the general manager's 2017 plan. We have worked to reflect the 3% cap on operating revenues for bus and rail services. Here again, about a third of the expenditure is for state of good repair for WMATA. We understand that currently it is facing some backlog, that the new dedicated funding will help address those backlog, and before long, state of good repair will be fully funded, and there would not be any uncertainties with it. Another point, Visualize 2045, I said earlier, lists all of the planned projects and programs between now and 2045. A second element of the TPP vision or goal is to move more people rather than more vehicles. And this chart here shows there are more than 600 projects that the region plans to build, highway and transit and non-motorized between now and 2045. But in the table, you will see the significant increase in capacity for high-capacity transit systems and a significant increase in capacity of express lanes or managed lanes. Those are two modes that help move more people rather than move more vehicles. So yet another example of how the jurisdictions, having helped develop regional goals and objectives, are working towards that. Perhaps there is more that could be done, but that's what we see in Visualize 2045. From a WMATA perspective, these are the projects that are included as funded, the Silver Line Phase 2, Metrorail, core capacity improvements, the 8-car train systems, the core station improvements, including power system upgrades, and also the new station at Potomac Yard. These are all assumed to be fully funded and to happen. So the TPB staff analyzed, if all of these projects are built, and if the forecast growth in population and employment transpires, how will the system perform? What are some of the indicators? And this chart explains or provides you a dashboard summary of it, and I'm going to highlight just a few of them. If you look at the growth, population, and employment, healthy growth, 29%, 32%. The capacity expansion, more for modes that carry more people. That's a good indicator of the plan elements. The drive-alone trips are forecast to grow the least. That is another good indicator of the TPB achieving its policy objectives. The amount of driving per capita is forecast to go down. Very few regions in the country which is experiencing significant growth can say that, so that is a good thing indeed, and it is probably the first time we are seeing this over the past 40 years. Good question. My next point. You would see that transit trips are increasing. Bicycle and walking trips are increasing. The land use policies we talked about earlier, much of the new growth being in regional activity centers that are connected with high capacity transit, that have good internal circulation system to facilitate walk and bike trips, are some of the reasons that this is happening. And the growth in managed lanes, and the cost or the attractiveness or the advantages of carpooling to avoid tolls and yet realizing the travel time savings are some of the indicators of why this is happening. But there are also indicators that the future transportation system performance has some things that we need to be concerned about, and that is at the bottom too. Congestion is forecast to increase 50% over today's level. So we did talk about the investment in capacity expansion is anemic. Having said that, it is about $42 billion. If we are investing $42 billion, and yet we are saying in 2045, congestion will be 50% more than it is today, it is something that we should not be accepting. That is exactly what the Transportation Planning Board said. And they said, well, we need to let us look at how we can change that outcome. How can we improve that? That is what led to the TPB creating a task force, which over a period of 2 years worked through a system of scenario analysis, looked at various options, and it did some technical analysis. It started with about close to 100 different ideas, and then it boiled it down to combining land use, transit investments, transportation investments, all working together collectively, meaning let us not try to address mobility and accessibility needs only through transportation investments. Let's also look at land use. So by combining these, they analyzed 10 different specific actions or initiatives. Of them, 5 of them rose to the top. And a couple more non-motorized initiatives were added for a total of 7 aspirational initiatives. I won't go over all of these with you today, except to say all 7 aspirational initiatives in some way, shape, or form depend on transit, whether it's bus or rail, light rail, heavy rail, BRT. So transit is going to be a key component for this region to realize its transportation aspirations. 2 of them explicitly talk about metro. It talks about moving more people on metro, expanding BRT systems and transitways in the region in which I believe metro will have a role. So I'm going to just talk a little bit and provide some clarification on the aspirational initiatives. But before that, why these aspirational initiatives now? As I said, the previous long-range transportation plan performance analysis indicated that the future performance outcomes was less than acceptable or desirable. So these 7 initiatives reflect the consensus. Once again, it is 44 board members, 24 jurisdictions, all working together. inner suburbs, dense urban cities, external suburbs, rural areas, all coming together to say, what is a package of initiatives that we can do collectively to help move the needle? So there's a consensus here. It was built on a couple years of extensive analysis, and that's what you see in these initiatives. With regards to the Metro Rail initiatives, I would like to point out that the TPB's aspirational initiative is titled Move More People on Metro. When TPB endorsed this, TPB was endorsing the concept, the idea, not any specific projects. The TPB deferred to WMATA and the regional entities to determine what specific projects and programs would achieve that outcome. However, because the TPB wanted to get a sense of what is the order of magnitude improvement we can get if we started moving more people on Metro, we had to make some assumptions. So we assumed certain projects. And those projects are documented, but the TPB was endorsing the idea of moving more people and not necessarily the specific projects that was included in the technical analysis. So with that, the approach that the TPB has taken towards all of its modal systems, but also with regards to Metro, has been we should fully exploit the available capacity today. We have invested billions of dollars into the system. Let us see how we can exploit the capacity to the fullest extent, which is there are some underutilized peak period, off-peak capacity that's available. How can we utilize that? Is it through fare policies? Is it through land use around underutilized transit stations? What's the ease of the multimodal access to the station? Oftentimes, getting in and out of the station causes delays. How can we address that? Are there bicycle and pedestrian access conveniently located and provided at every station? That's another area. The station circulation, within the station, how can we move more people more quickly, more efficiently, of course, more safely? And then how can the service be maximized? Through whether it is through innovative practices of complementing or a demand responsive type of system, how can we maximize service? So those are all the first building block. The second would be, let us then think of adding some capacity strategically. And here again, I say 100% 8-car trains. Of course, that would require some station improvements, but that could be, once again, building on the large infrastructure that we have, but adding more capacity. Once we have done that, the third block would be enhanced capacity through operational efficiencies. For example, we understand, just like as in a highway roadway design, within the rail system, there are some bottlenecks. That is the yellow, blue, and silver line bottleneck at Rosslyn. How could we address that bottleneck? Whatever the solutions are, we should look into that. Once you have done all of these things, in the face of the growth we are anticipating, you would need to consider expanding the system, particularly looking at large employment areas that are still unconnected by high-capacity transit. So those are the four building block approaches that the TPB has taken, and that is what is captured when it says the aspirational initiative is to move more people on Metro. So that's so I will conclude by saying Visualize 2045 is the region's current investment plans for building, operating, and maintaining the system, the planned projects and programs to improve transportation. The aspirations are to further improve the system performance and how WMATA and every jurisdiction can help. It's really the TPB's call to action to its member jurisdictions and to agencies to once again let us think regionally while acting locally.
Thank you, Mr. Shrikant. And thank you, Mr. Crawford, for suggesting that this conversation take place. It certainly reveals that among the many disparate groups that we have working in the same overall space, it kind of is revealed the complementarity that exists, and we really appreciate TPB working hard to understand WMATA and its operations and, in effect, validating many of the strategic priorities of WMATA and showing how if the region brings all of these things together, transportation, land use, roads, transit, can all work towards sustainable communities and even addressing larger issues like climate change, which are not even directly a part of the purview, but one of the positive unintended consequences. So we have a few minutes for questions and discussions with Mr. Srikanth. Anyone? None? Mr. Evans.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you for your presentation. And it was thoughtful, covered a lot of issues, et cetera, and I appreciate your doing that, and that the TPB continues to do a lot of work. I do want to mention the four issues that Metro faces, some of which you touched on, some of which you didn't. But unless these four issues are addressed, Metro will not function in 2045 or, frankly, in 2025 in the manner in which we want it to. Dedicated funding you talked about, but dedicated funding is not done yet. There is a 3% increase necessary every year on the funding that we put in place. Maryland and Virginia are not on board on that. Without that 3% increase in dedicated funding, not to be mixed up with my next point, we will not have the money necessary to fix the system. Operating shortfalls. Our operating budget is limited to a 3% growth. There is still a debate going on as to what that 3% covers. And so if we expand the system, is that part of the 3% or is it not part of the 3%? And frankly, if the 3% is a hard number, which many people in the region believe it is, the system will not be able to expand. So that's another issue that needs to be worked out. Unfunded pension liabilities have now exceeded $3 billion. No one wants to talk about them at all because that's a hard issue. And frankly, at the rate the unfunded liabilities are growing, it will begin to gobble up a lot of our operating expenses. And then finally, the big projects, the tunnel at Roslyn. No one wants to talk about that either. We're going to need it at some point in time. We haven't even begun planning it, thinking about it, or how we're going to pay for it. And then finally, the red line, which leaks, and we're doing a much better job now. But those who have looked at it believe that it needs to be encapsulated all the way from the city all the way out to medical center in order to stop the leaking. And frankly, if that project, which is billions of dollars, is not addressed, we will always find ourselves in a situation of leaking into our system that causes the smoke and the fires and everything that go on. So these four issues, dedicated funding 3%, operating 3%, unfunded pension liabilities, and the two major big projects, if not addressed, and they are not being addressed, will sink this system going down the road. So all that analysis you did is terrific. But unless we address these, and these are the hard issues that people really don't want to deal with, our system will not, in my view, survive and function in this region to the extent that we really need it to do.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. And I think that's mostly for Mr. Srikanth's situational awareness. We don't think we can expect him to work on the first three. But the other one, the projects, TPB actually has done a substantial amount of thought and helpful analysis. Any other comments or questions? Mr. Crawford.
Appreciate very much the analysis and the presentation. Question, to what extent in part of your assumptions did you take into account the changing work patterns with more and more people working remotely, not traveling to and from work, or they're moving closer into, you know, walking distances of their offices? To what extent did you take that into account?
It's a good question. And in the business of forecasting anything into the future, there is a degree of uncertainty. And partially to recognize that, these forecasts are not done infrequently. We frequently visit them. The TPB's current approach is we collect regional data from within this region. We do an extensive survey of all the households. We ask them about their travel pattern, not just for work. You know, with after work, what do you do? How do you travel? How many people do you travel? All of that stuff. So we collect all of that information, and we use that to calibrate our regional travel demand forecasting model. And when we include, hey, we are going to have 1.2 million people who will be living in probably 600,000 new housing units, and those housing units will likely be built in these places. The mathematical model is using the latest information we have as to how this region's households are conducting their daily travel. So we do that, but the risk or the uncertainty is this thing keeps changing. So what we believe are reasonable estimates today might change. Generally, from the past experience, we have been within 10%, but every now and then you see a substantive systemic change, and that will need to be borne out a little bit. I mean, right now there's been some papers written about how the millennials' travel patterns are different. We are beginning to see the millennial cohort age and get into the point where their family units are growing, so we will need to see how that changes. But that's the uncertainty with any forecast.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. And Mr. Goldman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to, I'm not going to filibuster, but I did need that water. I just want to pick up on a point that Mr. Dorsey raised, and that has to do with the environment. I noticed early in your presentation you have a slide that says TPB policy elements, and one of the bullets is protect and enhance the natural environment. And you did indicate that there's going to be a great increase in vehicle miles, more driving. And I'm just wondering whether you had a recommendation that would deal with moving to electric buses. I know that's something that DC is doing with their circulator. I know it's something that Montgomery County is looking at on the ride on, but WMATA with Metrobus is obviously a big gorilla in the room. So I'm just wondering whether TPB has looked at that issue as to what would be the impact of moving the bus fleet of the various bus operators in the metropolitan area from CPG and gas and diesel to electric buses, and whether that would have a substantial impact on the environment, reducing greenhouse gases and carbon dioxide emissions, and whether that's a recommendation that you're looking at or you're charged to look at and make a recommendation on.
Yes. About 2 years ago, the Transportation Planning Board worked with the Metropolitan Washington Air Quality Committee and convened a multi-sector working group involving about 33 different sectors. And looking at that specific question of how our environmental aspirations might be met, not just through the changes and through how the transportation system operates, but how we build our homes, how we heat our homes, what kind of business practices are being used. So we looked at it from all sectors. We analyzed specific actions. And within the transportation sector, one of the actions we analyzed and quantified the benefits we might get was exactly that, moving to alternate fuel vehicles. We didn't look at just WMATA or transit fleet, but we looked at across all fleet. If we could do electric buses, we definitely should be able to do electric cars as well. So let us look at the entire fleet and see what potential it has. It does show that that is one of the things we would have to do. Obviously, there is a significant investment needed to build the infrastructure. There is probably a significant role to be played by the federal government in supporting this infrastructure. They funded, they helped build the transportation infrastructure, and now I think it is now time to look at enhancing it and making it ready for the 21st century. So it is certainly the TPB, something that the TPB has advocated.
Have you quantified that? Is your report or your analysis quantify what the benefit would be?
The multi-sector working group analysis did quantify what the benefits would be, including on greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide, but not specifically for any one transit or highway or anything like that. It is throughout the region if we did it.
That's a terrific question to end on, because there is a wealth of reports and analysis and studies the TPB has conducted over the years that are probably useful for a lot of purposes. MWCOG.org, search for TPB. Within that, you'll find a wealth of materials. Mr. Srikant, thank you very much. We appreciate the information and your being here with us today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Thank you.
So next we're going to move to the other information item on our agenda, which is the capital budget quarterly update, which will be rolled into a work session on the FY20 capital budget. We'll turn it over to General Manager, Mr. Wiedefeld. Do you want to introduce Mr. Webster, or shall we just launch in? Okay. Mr. Webster, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. As the chairman said earlier, this presentation this morning will provide an update on the capital program and the capital budget and forecast. Briefly on capital program priorities, highest priorities of Metro's capital program are improving safety for customers, employees, and contractors, improving service reliability and the customer experience, and increasing efficiency to reduce future costs and ensure financial sustainability. Metro will continue to be good stewards of funding from the federal government and the region. Metro will develop and evaluate projects needed to address priority system preservation and state of good repair needs, and to proactively plan for future needs. And Metro is pursuing authorization of federal PREA funding to avoid the need for a $750 million increase in contributions from the jurisdictions over the next 5 years. Metro's capital program execution has improved dramatically over the past few years. After years of under-delivery, including FY 2015, when only 65% of the capital budget was spent, capital reinvestment in the system exceeded forecasts and expectations for the past two fiscal years. Last year's $1.25 billion capital investment was the highest annual amount in Metro's history. And this fiscal year, we are now expecting that investment will exceed $1.4 billion, basically double the amount that was invested in FY15. That increased capital reinvestment directly improves safety and service reliability for Metro's customers and the region. More than 600 7,000 series rail cars have been delivered, and old unreliable cars have been retired, resulting in the highest rail car performance in 8 years. Track rehabilitation and preventive maintenance programs are reducing incidents and delays and dramatically reducing smoke and fire incidents. Rail on-time performance in 2018 reached its highest level in 7 years. I'm going to spend a couple of minutes talking about our management emphasis for this year and next fiscal year. To deliver on Metro's capital program priorities and build on the successful delivery of the capital program over the past few years, our management team is focused on several program planning and management priorities. Highest priority is to deliver our active capital projects that improve the safety and reliability of the system, and to accelerate the execution of priority projects that improve safety, compliance, reliability, customer service, and long-term operating cost savings. Continuing to build on the programmatic approach to maintaining, rehabilitating, and replacing assets, and we're aggressively pursuing opportunities to combine projects and maximize the time we have to get work done, both in capital projects and maintenance work. For example, this summer during the platform reconstruction project, Metro will also upgrade traction power substations that power the blue and yellow line between those stations. In September of 2018, late September, we published and began implementing Metro's first ever organization-wide asset management plan. That plan was published on time and is in compliance with FTA's requirements. We're building capacity to manage a much larger and more dynamic capital program and to plan and execute a lot more capital projects, both through in-house capacity and through contractors. This fiscal year, we've awarded new competitive contracts for program, project, and construction management, and we are working now on additional competitive contracts for planning, architecture, and engineering. For FY 20 to 25 capital programming process, we implemented improved capital planning and programming practices, including the development evaluation program to better prepare projects for programming and execution. In FY 19, we're updating the capital prioritized capital needs inventory that was last published in 2016. This spring, we plan to formalize our capital program management policies and procedures for use in development of the next proposed capital program and going forward into the future. We're also in the process of developing new reports and performance metrics for both management and stakeholders. Metro is establishing that formalized process for capital program and project development. The structure begins with program planning, asset management, and capital needs prioritization, leading to the development and evaluation program, project development, and then project execution. The next six slides of this presentation display Metro's planned investment by investment major asset category. The committee reviewed these slides back in early November, but just as a reminder, active projects are in the left-hand box, upcoming projects are in the middle box, and capital needs and potential future projects are in the right-hand, or on the box on the right. Forecasted and planned investment for the fiscal year, this fiscal year, next fiscal year, and the six-year period are in the box at the bottom. So I'll go through these very quickly, just as reminders. For rail cars and rail car facilities, Metro is continuing to receive and put into service new 7,000 series cars. And based on our current forecast for delivery, we anticipate that the 748th car will be received and accepted in 2019. In September, Metro initiated the procurement of the next generation 8,000 series rail cars, which will replace the legacy 2,000 and 3,000 series cars and provide options to expand the fleet in the future as needed. That procurement is now underway. In rail systems, Metro is delivering the cellular, wireless, and radio project with service availability increasing, expanding throughout the system as underground segments are completed. In track and structures, the track rehabilitation projects and preventive maintenance programs are improving the reliability of the system. And project development for the next phase of the tunnel water mitigation project will be completed in this current fiscal quarter. Development of future projects, including an alternatives analysis for reliability and capacity improvements for the Blue-Orange Silver Line, which will include an initial study of the potential future tunnel crossing, is actually kicking off this quarter, that alternatives analysis. Station passenger facilities. This fall, Metro awarded the contract for the first phase of the station rehabilitation program, which will begin next summer at Blue and Yellow Line stations in Virginia, and project development is now underway for future phases of that program. Metro is also developing projects to improve access and crowding conditions at core and key stations, including, for example, Gallery Place, and in partnership with jurisdictions, other projects to support growth and development, including Crystal City and other stations. Bus and paratransit will continue to acquire new buses and paratransit vehicles. The new Andrews Federal Center bus facility is nearing completion and will open this summer. And we are this year going to be beginning the design build contracts for replacements of Northern and Bladensburg bus garages. In business support, Metro is moving ahead with the office consolidation program. The new headquarters building was purchased in the first half of this fiscal year, and the other locations are in development now. And, of course, we are investing in the information technology improvements to support bus and rail asset management and financial and business support operations. In total, the FY 20 proposed budget is $1.35 billion. And the proposed six-year CIP is $9 billion. Moving on to an update on the delivery of the FY19 capital program. 9 months ago, when the board adopted the FY19 capital budget, we expected investment rate for projects that were then underway would total just under $1.3 billion. Because of the continuing ramp-up of project delivery and some key opportunities to accelerate projects in the program, we're now forecasting that we will exceed that target by the end of the fiscal year. Our current forecast totals just over $1.4 billion, and investment could go as high as $1.5 billion. The majority of the increase in forecast is due to increased investment in track and structures through the track rehabilitation, capital projects, and preventive maintenance programs, an increase for the platform rehabilitation program, the acquisition of the new headquarters building, and the addition of the Potomac Yard station, which is funded by the City of Alexandria. We will return to the committee this spring with a recommendation on an amendment to the capital budget. With that, that concludes the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Webster. Quite efficiently done, and I'm sure there are lots of questions because there's a lot of important information that you have presented. If it's okay with the group, and remember, this is a work session, so everyone participates, and we don't have to go to committee members first. Wow, that got loud. If it's okay with everyone, if you could just sort of frame a little bit what you ended on about how we are where we are with a $154 million above target spend rate on the capital program you outlined. What are the drivers of that? But can you talk a little bit about, and mostly from my awareness, since I wasn't necessarily paying attention to this earlier, was this forecasted before when the committee last met in November or at some other previous time that we were going to exceed the FY19 budgeted amount?
So I think to frame, starting with when the board considered the budget 9 months ago, the budget was and the forecast were largely based on our forecast of projects that were already underway. The knowledge that we were starting more projects and pursuing these efforts to combine projects and take advantage of opportunities. We had sort of realistic or achievable schedules for some of the projects that I mentioned that are now the drivers of the increase in investment. So as the first quarter played out and going into the second quarter and these projects began to take hold and deliver, we knew that we were getting close to the forecast, but really in November is when we built up that expectation that we would exceed the
I would just suggest this may be a process improvement moving forward because it was certainly not fully absorbed by me that each of the decisions that the board may make on whether to accelerate work on platforms or to proceed with a real estate acquisition, knowing that that's not going to necessarily result in shifts from other program categories, which is certainly within the GM's purview to execute, but that would actually create an overall overage in the budget. We should probably figure out a process improvement to make that clearer at the point in time that those decisions are made so we don't come back and have the cumulative effect of, oh, wow, this is all added up to something different than what we were thinking about. With that, questions from others?
Just a point of process. Could I suggest that we try and divide this in two parts and focus first on the FY19 issues
that
you
fine.
Just raised, and then move on to the FY20.
That's perfectly
issues.
Fine. Do that. So FY19 is where we started. Anybody else want to continue with FY19, Mr. Goldman?
I do. I appreciate you raising the issues, and I think I must tell you that this came as quite a shock to me when I saw that you were projecting for the current fiscal year. Essentially overspending by what amounts to 9 or 10% of the budget, and it's actually more than that because you're sort of putting off. You're not spending $75 million for a rail car acquisition. So when you look at the rest of the budget, the actual overspend is about, I guess, closer to 15%, $225 million. And so I find that quite difficult to digest because, you know, while it's wonderful that, you know, some things have happened faster than others, on the other hand, when the board voted last spring a budget of, $1.279 billion, I think the expectation was you'd stick to that budget, you know, and that's what you would come in with at the end of the year. You know, maybe you'd move 1 or 2% different, and I can understand last year where we had a sort of acceleration of rail car deliveries. But it strikes me that when you're dealing with some issues like you're presenting now, where the increase, which is substantial, I'd say is maybe 15%, seems to result from changes in what you're getting in terms of bids from contractors, as opposed to what you had projected in the budget process, granted 2 years ago, and as well as your ability to take advantage of, as you say, opportunities.
Mr. Goldman, if I could just move, because I think there's a question in there as to whether or not what is the source of increased costs from expected from bids? To what extent is that a driver?
I guess what I'm looking for is if you could get us, before you come back with an amendment, a greater analysis of what's causing this discrepancy. How much of it, of the $154 million, reflects the Potomac Yards project, which is a reimbursable how much of it reflects some other issues in terms of your combining projects, you know, and whether you can look at projects that are in your bailiwick that can be delayed for a year or two that, you know, not as high priority, so that, you know, you can stick to the budget that was approved by the board last spring rather than coming back. Because I know the original first reaction I'm getting from Maryland was, wait a minute, we approved this budget, we appropriated the funds to cover this budget. I'm not sure how we're going to meet an increase in the budget for a year that's already been approved by the board and already been included in a legislative appropriation. So if you can sort of come up with some numbers and analysis for us as soon as possible rather than waiting for some time in the spring. I guess another issue would be how many of these projects are just an acceleration so that there's savings in the FY20 budget, and that budget could be reduced, which we're going to talk about in the next few minutes. You know, if we're just moving money from one year to the next year,
Mike, I'm just got to make it easy and actionable for them. So I think what we're hearing is consistent with what I framed the first time. If you could just give us greater detail on the drivers of the particular overages in this case, and think about process improvements moving forward for understanding those implications as we go. I'm not trying to stifle your right to speak, Mr. Goldman. We got to make sure we have clear guidance and takeaways for the staff to respond to.
No, I appreciate that. My concern is that we get this earlier rather than later.
Agreed.
Into the spring.
Yeah. Mr. McMillan.
And along those lines, just some suggestions on presentation. So where there's acceleration here, an additional column that said impact on 20 and future years capital programs. So clearly the money we're saving on rail cars in 19 is going to be added in 20 because that's simply a delay. When you're talking about acceleration of office consolidation, presumably plus 103 there is at least partially offset by some reductions in 20. So, you know, many of these are a timing issue. Some of these are, I assume, an escalation in cost for the same scope issue. Some of these may be an opportunity to expand scope to achieve efficiencies or greater outcome, whatever. If there's a fourth bucket that makes sense, that might be good, but some labeling like that might help us understand that we're getting less for our money, we're getting things at a different time, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, most of what I see here it sounds like the biggest driver here is timing rather than expanded scope or escalating cost. Is that
thank you, Mr.
fair characterization?
Your analysis is right on. Most of these are driven by timing, and our expectation is to come back to the board later this year, as Tom indicated, for additional authorization that still stays within the funding construct that this board approved over the next 6 years. So I appreciate the issues Mr. Goldman is raising, and we will certainly provide those information.
Yeah, and I don't represent a jurisdiction that has to figure out how to find the money here quite the same as the others in the room, but I would be much more alarmed if, the same scope of track and structures projects wound up costing 50% more than we'd planned. That's not what we have here. The way this table is constructed, that would be an easy mistake to make. That's just the point I wanted to make. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. McMillan. Any other comments about the FY19 budget? Following the
Mr.
process,
Chairman,
yes, Mr. Wiedefeld.
This also reflects a philosophy that we have applied, which is to be much more aggressive in delivering in the project. So we're putting a lot more pressure internally. We've got the external resources to start to deliver a program. As one of the earlier charts showed, you know, we were delivering the 65% to 70% of the program. So we don't want to back off of that sort of, you know, understanding that these are the things that the region wants. They do have them funded in the program period. We're trying to be aggressive as quickly as we can to get these things delivered because they impact service and safety. So that's sort of the overall philosophy that we're trying to, we don't want to back away from that. So I understand we got to get the communication out there. We got to get better at that. But the overall direction I believe that we've got from the board is, look, you've asked for dollars, deliver the projects and get them delivered. So that's what we've been trying to do. So that's sort of, that is what you're sort of seeing here.
Yeah, we appreciate that framing, Mr. General Manager. It's one of those things where, from the jurisdiction's interest, we endorse that overall approach. But if you remember, the price is right. It's you want to get as close to possible without going over. That's what we'd ideally like to see. So, all right. Mr. Crawford.
Just the, being fairly new, the $154 million, what's the funding source?
That strategy will be detailed when the amendment is presented in March.
Okay.
But it will not necessarily, you know, I think some of us are automatically assuming that there will be an ask of funding partners to contribute additional monies, and that is not necessarily the only strategy that can be employed. So is that consistent with what your thinking is, Mr. Anasike?
That's correct. We expect to stay within the funding envelope that this board and
the within the existing funding that you have.
Next 6 years.
Thank you.
All right. So any other questions on the 19 portion of this? All right. Let's move to 20, the good stuff. All right. The FY20 budget. Start with anyone else who has questions. We appreciate also the appendix, which addresses some questions which were raised by board members and the jurisdictions in advance. So let's not, rehash those since we do have written responses. Unless they were insufficient for your purposes. Otherwise, any other questions on the FY20 budget? Mr. Goldman?
I do have a question, but if Mr. McMillan or Mr. Price has something, I don't mind.
This is the work session portion, so we're going to treat everybody equally here. So why don't you go ahead?
I had raised a question about the rail car acquisition program, and you provided an answer to that in part in, I guess it's number two. And so as I understand what you're saying in that answer, you say final design will be completed in calendar year 2022 and that production will begin in calendar year 2023. So if production begins in calendar year 2023, does delivery begin? That's my first question.
So depending on the project is in procurement right now, so this is the tentative outline for the schedule for the program. Depending on when in 2023 production begins, you could have cars delivered at the end of 2023, or they may come in 2024.
So the production cycle is something like 12 to 18 months for a rail car?
All of that is part of the procurement process. So there's a production cycle, but that will be defined by the contract.
And now I understand why you don't want to state, which I had asked, the projected cost per car compared with the 7,000, since you're in a procurement cycle, and I guess the bids are due in April. Is that the correct date that I read in the paper? April of 2019? Is that when bids are due?
We'll confirm for you.
Okay. My question is, I assume there's been a number of rail car procurements nationally that have been reported in the general press and the trade press, Boston, New York, Philly, Chicago. Have you looked at what those prices are? Or do you have any information you could provide to the board as to what the general procurement price has been for rail car based on those contracts?
We can provide that information, but even though they're similar, they're not. Every procurement is going to be different. They have different requirements, different types of cars. It'll be a different marketplace. So, we can find out historically what is occurring.
What I'm trying to do is just get a sense of whether your numbers in your six-year program make sense.
But I just want to go too far and take one of those numbers and think you can apply it to here. They're just so different.
But if you could provide that, I think that would be helpful in just understanding what the scope of this procurement could be and whether your numbers are within those guidelines. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Smedberg?
Mr. Webster, just a general question. You have about $25.5 billion in capital needs of that, about $17.5 billion in state of good repair in a backlog. How much has that changed? over the period of time, or will it change moving forward?
It changes every day.
Every day,
okay. We address needs in the backlog and needs going forward. In recognition of that, we've kicked off that update of the capital needs inventory. Mm-hmm. And at a high level, what it does is it looks at the work that's been accomplished since the last update, identifies any assets or needs that were missed in that update, in the previous update, and then looks ahead a few years to see, it's basically a 10-year look to add future years on. So it's evolving all of the time. What we expect to see over time as we attack the backlog is for the backlog portions of that to be reduced, and for those sort of future needs to be a larger share of the ongoing need.
And I would just say, follow up on that question, I think it would be helpful to all of the jurisdictions as we try to be partners in reporting on the progress of Metro, if we could figure out some way of charting that progress sort of as we go instead of every couple of years, because we're always asked the question, you know, how do you know that you're doing better?
Yeah,
and, you know, we'd love to be able to say, all right, we're reducing the backlog by X amount, and we know that it's never going to be perfect contemporaneously, but if we could bridge the gap, that would be helpful.
Yes.
Other questions on the capital budget? I've got a couple, but I want to make sure everybody gets an opportunity. Mr. McMillan, we're fine. Mr. Crawford, Mr. Evans. Okay, if we could slide 9. This is just a very parochial question, if you will, but where do we stand in terms of traction power upgrades on the lines that are not referenced here? Or what's the status? Are we in good shape? Do we have a plan for, I guess we've got red, yellow, green, we're working on. So what about orange and silver? Are there any, or blue? Are there any work? Is there any substantial work that needs to be done, and when is that going to be scheduled?
So the work on blue, yellow, and orange is in the active projects box.
Oh, there we go.
The work
right.
is going on right now.
Right, right. I'm sorry. The future stuff, right. Okay.
I mentioned earlier this summer we're attacking the upgrades to the traction power substations on the blue and yellow south of the airport.
Okay, great. And the you talked about ramping up the ability to deliver the capital program, and I'm curious as to whether or not any of that ramp up includes personnel who are able to improve engagement with the jurisdictions in terms of coordinating these capital projects and all of the implications therein. Is that part of what this ramp up includes?
Yes.
All right, beautiful. Thank you. And I think the other question sort of concerns is this is applicable to the capital budget, but also, you know, has operating implications as well. There's a lot that's changed over the last couple of years in terms of how funding is computed, allocated, et cetera. Is there any plan to have a workshop, a working session with the CFOs or their designees to have them really understand how WMATA constructs budgets within the new dedicated funding regime, how that has operating implications? I think we board members hear a lot of questions about where do the numbers come from, how do they work? Is there any plan to sort of bring people in so that they can fully understand that?
Mr. Darcy, we do have conversations with the jurisdictions on a fairly regular basis, this quarterly. To the extent that this is a need, on either side, we will be more than willing to do so.
Yeah, I think maybe a different strategy would work, because I think the continuing conversations are not probably producing the single clarity that we probably need. So I would encourage you to think about the efficacy of bringing people in to look at systems. And, you know, if you can't share materials because systems don't produce spreadsheets, which is something that I've heard, then bring people in so that they can take a look at, you know, how things are constructed. I don't want to get involved in it. I just want everybody to at least, I don't want to have debates about numbers. I think it's integral, and the onus is on WMATA that we don't have debates about what the numbers are and how they should be calculated.
I don't understand that. Can you provide further clarity?
I think that the core issue here is to get something more formalized. We do, Dennis does calls with the CAOs and the CFOs, mm-hmm. because they're, you know, at the end of the day, they're the real money people. Mm-hmm. So we got to do a little bit more with that than is what I'm hearing. So we'll set up something more formal to do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I might add one other thing to consider, and that is what Mr. Evans talked about with the 3%, the various 3% caps. One of the issues that we're going to have to address is if we want to get the jurisdictions to support funding beyond the 3% caps, there's probably going to need to be more transparency in terms of how money's being spent. One potential option would be to do a variation of a zero-based budget over a 2 or 3 year period to create the transparency, because the question that I know that we get in Maryland as we from Annapolis and from Department of Transportation is, what are they doing with the existing money? So I think as we, it's great that we have the performance, we can show the improved performance, that's part of it, but I think we need to have added transparency over spend if we want to get the jurisdictions to invest more into Metro. Just a consideration.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Crawford. We'll figure out how to work on that, but I think you do raise an important issue. There's historically been the sense that WMATA is not efficient, and, you know, it's a new WMATA. So, you know, how do we figure out how to relay that to broader stakeholders is an important thing. All right, it looks like there are no other questions. Mr. Goldman.
Thank you. Just giving everybody else an opportunity. I wanted to just ask you one more question about the station and passenger facilities part of the budget. So on your slide 14 on the FY 2020 budget, you know, the biggest of the six elements there is station and passenger facilities, which is listed as $360 million of the $1.3 billion. So I asked you for a breakdown of that, and what I got back was not totally helpful. You seem to break the budget down in two big pieces, state of good repairs projects at $118 million, and then major projects, let's assume, or new projects at $225 million. But in the two paragraphs where you have an explanation of this, your numbers don't add up. You know, you say that the state of good repairs is $118 million, but then the four projects you cite only add up to $70 million. And the 225 major projects, the single paragraph you have, adds up to $217 million. So I didn't find it helpful, and what I really would ask is if you could provide just a single-page Excel spreadsheet chart that just lists all the projects with the numbers and something that adds up to $360 million, so that a more useful response to the question than the two paragraphs that were drafted. And I appreciate it was probably drafted over the holidays, and people were doing other things over the holidays, hopefully, than just drafting responses to board member questions. But if we can get
so is that something that you can provide for Mr. Goldman?
Yes.
Terrific. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Webster, Mr. Anasike, and Mr. Wiedefel. We appreciate that very much. One other question about future Finance Committee scheduling. There was one pre-holiday, it seems like a long time ago, a working session on the operating budget. And I know that that came at a time where there weren't a whole lot of questions because people hadn't had a whole lot of time to review it. We'll have the public hearing docket coming up. Are we going to schedule another opportunity to consolidate any lingering operating questions on the agenda?
No, Mr. Darcy. I'm not aware of any questions, but if there are, I will be more than glad to respond to them.
Not necessarily at this point, but just in the process. We haven't had the public hearings yet.
Well, staff will come back to the board
right.
Following the public hearing.
So. Right. I'm suggesting in the interim, since we do have months there might be an we'll talk in the scheduling of the committee about another time to consider operating questions. All right. Thank you very much. We're going to move to our action items on the agenda. So, gentlemen, if you would yield the floor to Ms. Albert and her team. And Ms. Albert, I would just say that Mr. Evans has, you know, tried to make us a little bit more efficient than we were planning on being today. So I think for the purposes of time, if you could skim through West Falls Church, since that may be less familiar, and then really speed through Capitol Heights, since that should be very familiar, that would be appreciated.
No problem. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. Today we're seeking board authorization to issue a joint development solicitation for property that we own at the West Falls Church Metro Station. Just to review the land that we own around the station, in essence, it encompasses what is currently 8 bus bays right directly in front of the station entrance, 45 kiss and ride spaces, approximately 2,000 park and ride spaces, which are both in a surface parking lot as well as in a parking garage. The key thing to note about this station is that it used to be incredibly utilized by people parking from around Northern Virginia, and then once the Silver Line opened, at this station in particular, the average daily ridership declined by 71%. So there was a big draw to the Silver Line, and subsequently, this station in particular saw a correlated drop in ridership. Today, as it stands, there is a lot of activity right around the Metro Station, the West Falls Church Metro Station. Most notably are 3 projects. The first is an economic development project that is being spearheaded by the City of Falls Church. They are taking a property that currently has a middle school and a high school, consolidating their education facilities and building a new education campus, and then making free 10 acres for economic development. They are anticipating, just over 1 million square feet of mixed-use development that is within a quarter-mile walk of the Metro Station. Then between the City Falls Church property and our Metro Station is a property controlled by UVA and Virginia Tech. UVA and Virginia Tech is in the process right now of evaluating proposals for mixed-use development on their property as well that would incorporate a UVA-Virginia Tech presence. So the 2 properties, this is approximately 12 acres in total, nothing to do with WMATA property, are under redevelopment, and those properties, that those projects will generate, in our estimation, anywhere between 1,500 to 2,000 new daily riders from those mixed-use projects alone. And the thing that would hinder people from really using Metro is a huge surface parking lot that sits squarely in between the Metro Station entrance and those proposals. And then lastly, this is a significant infrastructure project being proposed by VDOT, which is a new eastbound ramp off of I-66 directly into the Metro Station entrance. So there's a lot going on that encourages us to take on joint development at this time. WMATA's goals in advancing joint development at the station, first and foremost, would be to create those connections, to build and sustain ridership growth at this station, to accommodate eastbound I-66 traffic that would be coming into the station now as a result of this new infrastructure investment, and then to coordinate in a master plan with these adjoining developments so that the community that's there now can have an integrated and a seamless and development as a whole. So what is our solicitation approach? This is a rare case where we would seek to do a limited competition. Both of the adjoining properties have been bid on over the past 10 months by 2, there have been several developers, but anyway, now it's down to 2. Hitt and Rushmark is one, and then P. N. Hoffman and EYA was just recently announced in November to be the winner of the City of Falls Church property. In our joint development policy guidelines, it permits us to enter into a limited competition with adjacent property owners. We think that this strategy will render the best results for the community as well as for WMATA because there's a lot of strategic ways to deliver development if it could be coordinated. So with that, barring any questions that you may have, we're seeking authorization to issue a joint development solicitation at West Falls Church.
Thank you. I doubt this has any controversy. All interested parties are excited to see this move forward, so why don't we put a motion on the floor to recommend that the board authorize the joint development solicitation? So moved. Is there a second from a member of the committee?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Goldman. Thank you. Discussion, questions, comments? Seeing none, all in favor of authorizing the joint development solicitation for the West Falls Church Metro, say aye. Aye. Passes 3-0. Thank you very much. Congratulations, Ms. Albert. We'll move to Capitol Heights next.
So this project is more familiar and to many of you because we recently had a joint development agreement for this property that was terminated earlier this year. We've had a handful of interested parties who would like to bid on this property again, and so we're very familiar with the conditions. We have a lot of the public vetting and approvals already in place, so we're coming back to the board for authorization to issue a joint development solicitation. Again, the history of this is we issued one in 2014. The board approved the joint development agreement in 2016. We had recently a compact public hearing, and this is important in that we vetted with the public and got board approval to permanently remove the surface parking lot that is at Capitol Heights Metro Station in favor of joint development, which frankly makes it economically feasible not to have to replace parking at that specific location. And then, like I said, in spring of this year, the joint development agreement was mutually terminated between us and the developer. So just as a reminder, this is the red represents the outline of the property that we control. The properties that we would be putting on the market do not include the bus loop and kiss and ride facilities, only the surface parking lot off of Central Avenue. And then there's a small parcel that can be developed for townhomes. So we would put that back out on the market.
Is that parcel B?
That is parcel B, correct. So the eastern half of parcel A and then parcel B is what we would offer. Long-term goals, of course, is to continue to build ridership around the Capitol Heights Metro Station. One of the things that's unique about Capitol Heights is the number of public agencies that own land around Capitol Heights. So in blue is the WMATA property that we would be offering. Davie Street LLC is a property that WMATA sold to a private developer previously, and so both of those parcels are WMATA control, where we're trying to get them into private hands for development. And then the CH, the yellow boxes on the bottom part of the picture, is the town of Capitol Heights. They are actually putting their parcels back on the market as well concurrently. So you're going to see a lot of opportunity for developers to bid on multiple parcels right at the station. And then on the DC side of the line, the DC Housing Authority controls quite a bit of property. So this has potential to be an economic development project across a couple different jurisdictions. So what we would look to do, because we're so familiar with the site and the economics and the valuation of the site, put a joint development solicitation on the market reasonably quickly here, February timeframe, select a developer and negotiate terms of an agreement with them in the summer, and then come back to the board before the end of this calendar year. So with that,
thank you.
Any questions?
All right, do we have a motion on the floor?
So moved.
All right, so moved to recommend that the board issue a joint development for Capitol Heights. Second.
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Any questions, comments? I think we're all interested in seeing this move forward. We hope this time it sticks. So all in favor, members of the committee, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. And Madam Secretary, we don't have any other business before the committee today, right? All right, so with no other business, the committee stands adjourned, and we turn it over to Mr. Evans.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for running a very efficient meeting.
In accordance with the bylaws, I, Jack Evans, request that the Board of Directors convene an executive session to discuss the following matters pursuant to Article 2, Paragraph 9, Subsections A, budgetary matters that may affect legal positions, WMATA contracts, or sensitive relationships with local jurisdictions or the federal government, and F, safety and security matters when premature release would compromise public safety. So I'd like to move this request at this time. Is there a second? Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The ayes have it. We'll see everybody upstairs immediately so we can get started. Thank you.